Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
An Erios original.
You're so great in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You are so young. I mean, I thought that you were 16. And
well, when I was 16, I looked like a fetus.
Oh, so baby.
Yeah.
You can twerk squatting. Presumably, you could be like those like guys in Hong Kong who stand on the top of a building in the very, very scary Instagram videos.
Yeah,
and
or like a goat. You know how?
Yeah, you could be like a goat twerking.
Yes,
like on a cliffside or a mountaintop. Welcome to The Margaret Show, where we talk to people you know and people you should know. Today, I am talking with actor Alan Ruck. He is amazing. You may remember him, of course, from the iconic Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and most recently on my favorite show, Succession. Yeah, I'm coming out of the dark. We are long-term fans. I'm a long-term fan of yours. It's very exciting to meet you.
You're charming. Thank you.
Thank you. I think probably the first thing everybody would say would be Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, I did a couple of things before that, but that was something that was sort of it was actually it's the best part I've ever had in a feature film.
Huge, but like a socially huge phenomenon to be in a John Hughes film at that point.
Right, but who knew?
How did you get that part?
Well, I actually started in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and when I was there, I actually met John, because he was going to do the Breakfast Club as like a little indie, like a little Chicago indie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was like 1982 or three.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in and I auditioned for him, you know, with some other people. And then he met Molly Ringwald during that process, and mm-hmm. he dropped everything and he wrote 16 Candles over a weekend for her.
Wow.
Just, you know, she was his muse.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to New York and did a Broadway play with Matthew. And then during that time, he was offered Ferris Bueller, and I was older than I looked, and they didn't want to see me because they knew that I was 29, or no, I was 28 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And but my agent said, well, he plays opposite Matthew every night on stage. They look like they're the same age. So I went in and I auditioned for the casting people, and they said, yeah. And then I went back in and read with Matthew mm-hmm. for John.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just... It was just serendipitous, you know?
Well, you have such great chemistry with him. And I think you're lucky because that era and all of those particular, like, the Brat Club actors, like, sort, you know, it was hard. It was Brat Pack.
Brat Pack, yeah.
That was hard for them to break out.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought that it was great. You were sort of perfectly positioned there to have this great long career. You and, like, John Cusack... You know, and
I did a movie with Johnny when he was 16.
Oh, really?
But he was like 16 going on 40. And we did this movie, terrible movie called Class with Rob Lowe.
I love that movie.
Oh, I'm glad.
Love that movie with Andrew McCarthy.
And Jacqueline Bisset.
She's great in it.
Yeah, she's
That's
great.
A great movie. It's like a kind of like, it's like a
reimagining of The Graduate in a way.
Well, I'm glad that you like it.
I love it. I think it's a great movie.
Yeah, so I met John when he was quite young. And Joan, I met both of them. Yeah, yeah, because they're Chicago kids.
Yeah, and I remember in 16 Candles, he's...
You're full of compliments. I'm going to come over more
so
often.
So good. But he's one of the dorks that are like, they're selling like the floppy disks for Molly Ringwald's underwear.
Oh,
in 16 Candles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's got like a headpiece. They're like talking on walkie-talkies or something.
Yes.
Yeah, he's very silly.
And then he gets put in like the, is it like trunk by Jake?
I can't remember.
Something like that.
But you could tell with that guy because he's so smart. I haven't seen him for years, but I mean, he was 16 years old. And he had no desire to go to college. He was just like ready to go to the bank. You know,
That's great.
He knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. He was a baby, but he knew what he was doing, and he was just ready.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you're so great in Ferris Bueller's Day Off because you have this sort of, you are so young. I mean, I thought that you were 16, and
well, when I was 16, I looked like a fetus.
Oh, so baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you're so young, and that, but you have this weary behind the eyes of dealing with Ferris. It's like this marriage that maybe worked at some point,
yeah,
but now doesn't.
We need therapy. Yeah.
Yeah, you need therapy. And there's so much history between you that's underneath the acting that's like really apparent. Maybe that's the play.
Well, we were, you know, we'd done the play together for 9 months, and so we were already pals, and we shared a really similar sense of humor. We didn't have to make anything up. You know how it is, like you show up on set, and it's like, this is your sister, this is your boyfriend,
right?
This is your husband, this is your lover, whoever, and you have to like create something right away.
Yeah.
We didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
We just were pals, and it was really lucky.
Well, it's great because there is that beautiful subtext underneath of like, you really do care for him, but you're just tired of it. and every time you've made so many mistakes and you've made many ultimatums.
Yeah, one or two that are ignored.
There seem to be a lot of ignored ultimatums I think spiritually as an actor.
The relationship's in trouble.
Yeah, the relationship's in trouble. But I think spiritually as an actor that you do make ultimatums in your relationships with other characters, in whatever. In Succession, I notice it with Willa.
Oh yeah.
You've made ultimatums to her.
But I always back it up with money, so it's, you know, so she comes through.
I am so surprised by you on Succession because as the stories progress, you become something that I didn't anticipate. Like your character becomes something that I didn't anticipate from the beginning. But
which is what?
Which is like, you know, I kind of thought like you start off as Ed Begley Jr. Like, I'm like, oh, he's probably going to like really make an electric car. Like, I'm like, oh, his purpose here is he's going to invent something like that's really good for the environment.
Yeah.
But rather it's going to be the president. And it's very like, so, and you turn into something that I don't know whether it's, oh God, it's like it's a Ross Perot feeling that I get, you know, it's not Trump, but it's a kind of, maybe it's a Jeb Bush or not even it's something.
Yeah, we're still figuring it out as we go. I mean, we have the greatest writers I've ever worked with, and they keep it pretty close to the vest. I mean, we'll get the script, we'll have like read through. We'll get it at 2 a.m. the night before.
Wow.
We don't get a lot of lead time.
Yeah.
Which drives Hiam Abbas crazy because she's Palestinian.
Yeah.
Who speaks like 5 languages, but she's like, English is not my first language, you know, and so she doesn't know like sort of the idiosyncrasies and the vernacular and stuff.
Yeah.
And so she would really appreciate a little lead time, but they just can't. They're so good. They can't leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still figuring out where he's going and what he is. They're all damaged.
So
they're all really, really
but
damaged.
In a way that is so true. You know, I feel like your character lives in the Frank Lloyd Wright house on Franklin. You know?
Yeah.
It's that big Aztec house. Your house in like, what is it? Where is it? Is it
New Mexico?
New Mexico.
Yeah.
It's very similar. I'm like, is this supposed to be like a Frank Lloyd Wright house? Like, it's so...
Yeah, it's ostentatious.
It's great.
Yeah.
But it's his taste. That's what he would do because he's got to like buy his life.
Right.
But he's got to buy his taste and buy his friends.
Yeah.
And buy his lovers to an extent, but you don't want to be that I mean, I'm like telling you who your character is, but
But that's helpful.
You know what I mean?
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, but it feels like he's able to purchase a personality.
Well, I just think money goes a long way with a lot of people. And I think, I mean, what we kind of figured out with him is, hey, baby. you know, he's probably like an ADHD kid,
right.
But this was back like in the, say the 70s when people didn't really have a real good take on that. It was in the early stages of figuring out what that thing was.
Yeah.
And in these dynastic families, people that aren't, you know, achievers and sparkly, they're kind of, you know, they're pushed to the side a little bit, you mm-hmm. know. And so what we figured out was that the old man divorced my mom probably when I was like about 8 years old.
Right.
And then he got involved with the new wife, with the dragon lady, and had the, you know, the golden trio. And mm-hmm. I was like on the outside looking in. So I think
right.
that's been a lot of my life with
yeah.
with the old man and with my brothers and my sister. And just, you know, probably tried business school, but like dropped out after a semester because just
right.
couldn't cut it. And then like maybe tried art school and then mm-hmm. didn't have any talent and then just didn't have to do it. This guy's never worked a day in his life.
Right.
I mean, you know, the old man out of guilt made big investments for
yeah.
me from the time I was born, and I've never had to do anything.
Yeah. But I think that's really to his disadvantage, because it's like you were never able to really figure out who you are.
No, yeah.
And that's
He's
really
lost.
Sad.
He's lost.
Yeah.
You know?
And the sadness of like, could I really be in love with somebody, or is somebody going to love me? I think I'm going to have to buy that too.
Well, I think it was just something like, I met this girl through my brother, this woman, and she's fantastic, beautiful, smart girl who happens to be, you know, a professional escort as well as a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I need a girlfriend and you need money?
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
You know, it was like perfect. This is perfect.
Yeah.
I have money. You need money?
But he really loves her, which is like makes me sick. I feel so bad. I'm like, oh God. Like, because he
but
really
I don't
loves
know.
Her.
Yeah. I don't know where she's gonna go. It could be that she just gets fed up, or it could be that, like, he says, let's have a baby, and she's like, oh no, 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 no.
Mm-hmm.
And then backs off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know where she's gonna go either. She's another lost soul.
Yeah.
I mean, she got more on the ball than he does, for sure. But she's not completely there. She's not altogether.
Well, it's like she's begrudgingly opportunistic. She's like the inverse of Tom, who is openly opportunistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because eyebrows are always searching for an opportunity to insert himself into like whatever
yeah.
it's going to be. I'm going to do it. And
groveling sycophant.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she's like really like the shadow side of that, where she's not doing that, but she actually very apparently
But something
is.
Presents itself and she's like, well, all right.
Yeah, like yeah. it's like this dream that I wish that maybe like if they do the director's cut or the if DVD extras, that we'll see her play.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll have to we'll have to go back and do that.
Did they give you an idea of what it was like?
What the,
the play is?
You know, it was just, it was a girl who was trapped by a madman in the desert and desperately trying to get away.
Yeah.
that was pretty much what we had.
I was like, oh, wait, well, I want to see the play. Like, I was like thinking we were going to see the play the whole time. And I was like planning on it, getting ready in my mind. We're going to see the play. And then I guess, you know, of course, it's like the focus is on the family. It's not going to be on the, you know, this sort of outside thing. But to me, that seemed really important.
We'll see where it goes. I mean, I didn't have all that much to do in the second season, and I think it's going to shift a little bit. So who knows what'll happen with Willa,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it could be that we get expanded a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's definitely, I'm so intrigued by your journey there. It, to me, seems like the most real because, you know, of course, it's like, with Roman and Kendall and with Shiv, there seems to be a track of like motion. But then with you, to me, your character is the most authentic because those are the casualties of wealth that I see around.
Yeah.
You know, you see those really rich sort of those, the Hiltons and the,
yeah,
you know, over all over that are kind of never.
The Gettys and all that stuff,
Who like, you know, and then you're almost like the just past the generation where you'd get kidnapped and then they would send your ear back, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe you just, like, that would be something you went to school with.
Yeah.
You just missed that.
Yeah.
So it's like the character that you're presenting is so authentic to the experience of the wealth that is so foreign to most people that I've gotten like witness to.
Well, we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I think in a way, I think Roman is the most well-adjusted of the four.
Right.
Because Siobhan, everybody thinks it's her because she's most like the old man. She's just, you know, she'd slit your throat for a dollar and say, it's just business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kendall's a mess. Roman is a snot and he's snarky and, you know, but I actually think he might be a real survivor of this whole mess.
Right.
You know, Siobhan is we're all like clamoring for the old man's attention and love. And she was the one that went 180 degrees away and, you know, starts to work with this social Democrat and, you know, I can make it in D.C. without you. Mm-hmm. And the first time the old man says, I would love you to come back and run the company, she just, she couldn't get there fast enough. You know?
Yeah.
And then she's like tripping over herself, you know, when he's, like he does, when he plays people and then there's, you know.
Yeah.
He's got three people going at the same time and see, you know, who's going to destroy who.
But like your character is like sitting aside of it, like kind of like doing your own thing, but it's also kind of aligned on the same political track.
Well, he's just as entitled as any of them, you know. And I mean, just living with that kind of wealth and never having to work for anything, never having to wait for anything, you know. I mean, he's a sociopath in that sense that he has no idea what real people, what regular people go through. No idea at all.
Yes.
I mean, even the Kennedys used to say, I mean, JFK said, he said there was depression going on, but we didn't know anything about it.
Right.
You know, because it's just, that's not how they lived.
But then you could project onto your character's face that like kindness and like concern about the country. Like there's something about the persona that I could see, like politically this actually probably works. In the same way that George W. Bush works, because he has this visage of like caring.
Did he?
Kind of. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, but now we look back, he has actually a great president. But, you know, back then it was like, we didn't appreciate it. But here's this sort of like the old, I guess he's the eldest son of this like very, very long, long-term political family.
Oh, yeah.
Very wealthy. And, you know, problems, but kind of got pushed into like politics.
Yeah.
And was just sort of like, kind of like in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
To be elected.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah. It was like a look and a projection of society of what we needed.
Yeah.
So it's like your character, it's like running for president. It's like, I feel like we could project onto him like what we need.
Well, I think that happens all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So you show up a cipher and people fill you up with what they believe.
With meaning.
Yeah.
And intention that you may not have.
Right.
But they need you to have.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter because you'll take it.
Yeah.
So it's like, great.
Because it gives us purpose, and it's like, well, this is the right thing for us to do, you know, right here. It's almost like you're being cast in a role.
I think on some level, the 1% really does care about the environment. They just want all the rest of us to die off first.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like, oh, let's take care of the ocean. You know? It's like, let's get the population down to about, 500 million.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're going to take care of things.
We can deal. It's like... But I always thought like, okay, your character is going to either like invent some kind of electric car or some kind of like alternative to fossil fuels.
Well, there was this, I actually can't remember if it made it into the show now, but there was this, supposed to be this business venture about yurts.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah.
It did.
And, you know, it did not go well. So I think in different times in his life, his heart has been in sort of a good place about these sorts of things. It's just that he's got no business sense whatsoever. He doesn't, he's not like the other kids. He doesn't know how to run a company. He doesn't know how to do anything like that.
Right. Like it reminds me of, he is a Kennedy and, he does a lot of work for the environment and, he was doing a charity that with
Joe.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
He was doing a charity that was about the rivers and ensuring the sanctity of rivers.
Yeah.
And it was like, so you, so your character.
So it's like Bobby's son, Joe.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
And he was going around with Jimmy Buffett in a private plane and doing a lot of talks about how we need to keep the rivers safe.
Yeah.
And
God bless him.
It was great. But it was also kind of like this thing of like, you don't care about the rivers. Like, you know, that's bullshit. You don't, no, but I'm sure he does. But it was this funny thing of like, here's somebody who's like so wealthy, but he does a lot of work for the environment. He's a big sort of green guy.
You know,
cool.
You know who is like sort of, what's not, word isn't curator, but it's, he's dedicated to the preservation of the Channel Islands. It's Joe Walsh.
Oh, right.
You know, from,
from
Eagles.
Yeah.
And the James Gang, if you remember. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's interesting,
that's interesting,
the different people that get involved in these things.
But then there's like always like the, you know, sort of the famous person. So I feel like your character would team up with like Leonardo DiCaprio and helping you know, indigenous people of Canada.
Yeah.
Like they're like doing a lot of stuff with First Nations.
Oh, is that right?
They're for like to for it's environmental stuff.
I have small children. I don't know anything that's going on.
Yeah,
I just mostly I'm tired and
I know
I sleep a lot and I have no idea about current events.
Well, no, so it's all these celebrities that go and they all have like yoga top knot men, and then they go and they have
is that
like
the Steven Seagal look.
Yeah, but it's all really high up.
Oh, nice.
So like Steven Seagal's like low on the base of the skull.
But this more looks like a turd on the top of
the
skull.
This is more like a top knot tied up yoga knot, and then they go and they do work with like the environment.
Well, I'm working on it. I think
you
I
could probably, yeah,
more.
If you could just like, yeah, pull it up at the
pull
top.
It all forward, okay.
I think that's good. Now, I am excited. Have you started shooting 3?
No, we'll start in like the third week of April. We'll start.
Oh,
up.
Yeah. So you don't, I mean, the wave of like incredible fandom, it's pretty insane.
It grew in a funny way because when we premiered, a lot of these critics were saying, oh, there's nobody to root for. They're all despicable. I have never had that problem
right.
with any sort of show. I mean, it's like they're all scumbags. Great. Let's see, you know.
Yeah.
As long as it's amusing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then about halfway through the first season, they started saying things like, the show has finally found itself, which I think the show always knew who it was. They just didn't know, you know.
Yeah.
They had to catch up. But it's just incredible writing. I mean, these guys, like I said, they take such care with every script, and we sort of get it the last minute, which is, you know, the writing is so good, you can't really complain, but mm-hmm. you'd love to have a little lead time. It's the only thing, I mean, that all of us would probably say, would, you know, it'd be great if we could just get it like a day or two before. But then whenever we shoot, they'll come up with literally a couple of pages of alternate lines.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll shoot things as scripted, and then they'll come up and say, okay, we got that. Do you want to try any of these?
Oh,
and you want to try all of them because
it's
all great. And then generally all the directors, but definitely Mark Mylod, who's my favorite, don't tell the others, will say, okay, guys, a free one. Like whatever comes out of your mouth.
Mm, that's great.
And sometimes it's crap, you know, but sometimes somebody just, you know, gets a little bit inspired and then they take a left turn. And if you hang on, mm-hmm. you know, and just go with it, every now and then you get something really fresh and great.
That's great.
It's a fun way to work.
And it's, I think what's great too is your acting is so amazing that they trust you. Like, you know these characters. So even if they give it to you moments before, you know what that's going to be.
Well, another thing I'm telling you, the writing is so good. I mean, an actor repairs is an oxymoron, but I really think for a lot of us, you just kind of have to show up,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's like, this is the situation. This is the dialogue. Go, you know? And in a way, it kind of plays itself.
Right.
Because you don't have to make anything work, you know?
Right.
You don't have to like, oh, what is, you don't have to sort of beat yourself up trying to get a proper performance. It's just, it flows.
And it's in there, like it's like in the structure of who you've already built. So it's like this thing of like, this is actually very natural.
They were really quick to pick up on people's rhythms mm-hmm. and people's personalities. So like Nick Braun,
oh, yeah,
Cousin Greg,
mm-hmm.
they just kind of picked up on his rhythm right away, and they started to write the way Nick naturally speaks.
Yeah.
So it's just fluid, mm-hmm. you know? It's really close to his bones, so.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, it's great. And you're so great on it, and I can't wait to see what transpires. I'm, like, so excited.
I'm glad.
I'm so excited. Now, what do you do? You got to do all the other acting stuff, like, while you're on hiatus.
I was supposed to do an indie, but you know how these things go. The money fell through like 3 days before shooting. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, fine. But anyway, truthfully, my wife is working a lot, and we both work all over the world. And we have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, 9-year-old girl, 5-year-old boy. And so it's tricky now because they're in school, and especially my 9-year-old has a social life, mm-hmm. and she doesn't really appreciate being dragged to Europe or wherever.
Yeah.
So if I don't have any work, it's fine because I just get to spend time at home with the kids.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's great. It's great.
It's nice. And it's like you have such a, it's such a long and amazingly like storied career. So many different things, so many great things. It's like, is there something that you haven't done that you thought, oh, well, this would be a good thing. Like, is there, everybody's got like, I want to do Death of a Salesman on Broadway.
Well, I did have, but I'm too old now. For a long time, I wanted to play Tom in A Glass Menagerie.
Oh,
I just
yeah.
always wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, a little long in the tooth for that now. I mean, it is a memory play, but you know, he shouldn't be like 60 and remembering, you know, his
yeah.
sister.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that's a cool one though.
Pass me by. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's a cool one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have one for myself, but it's something that I'm always curious. Like, people always think, I will never play the Dane, like a Hamlet
yeah.
or whatever.
No.
Something like that.
I thought that Brian Cox and I should do The Dresser.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. But, you know, I'd probably get a lot of shit for doing a British accent. So
why not? Oh, you could do it.
Yeah, I could do it. But it's just, you know, you catch a lot of shit for that. Like Brad Pitt did that one movie where he played the IRA kid with Harrison Ford.
Oh,
and I think they were just looking for a reason to beat him up. I thought he sounded fine.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he sounded good, but they just beat the hell out of him. And then he kind of took that in a very Buddhist way and then sort of recycled it for Snatch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then sort of did like the unintelligible version of the Irish accent. Yeah.
That's funny.
He kind of got back at him.
Wow. Well, you know, there's a lot of British actors on Succession.
We got a couple.
Yeah, got a couple. We're Australian,
We got Sarah Snook is our Aussie, and we got Matthew McFadyen is our classically trained British leading man, and then we got Cox, who's he's a Scot,
mm-hmm.
you know. So yeah, we got some accents.
You
going
got
on.
Some accents, and then like British people, like.
Matthew caught a lot of shit. For being a guy from Minnesota. And I think
really?
He sounds great.
He sounds great.
You know, but you know, I just think people are always looking for something to be snarky about. Otherwise, nobody would pay attention to their reviews.
Yeah, he's really good. There's a lot of things on Twitter of people doing different impressions of the Succession characters. I don't know if you've seen that. But
no, I haven't. No.
Pretty good. The Kendall's amazing, pretty amazing. And the Tom is pretty amazing.
Yeah,
it's really, it's fun. Well, the British characters, like Renee Zellweger does a great Bridget Jones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the most iconic British modern character.
Yeah.
So you could do The Dresser.
That Academy Award winner.
Yeah, you could do The Dresser for sure. So are you on the Instagrams? Are you on the Twitters? Are you on the...
No, my wife is on the Instagram because her agent said, you know, you have to have a media presence. And I'm just too old for all that shit. It just seems like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I know.
But that's how you get like the Clairol deals, right?
I guess so.
It's like, how many followers do you have? Let's offer you this campaign.
That'd be good. I do it, but it's a struggle for me. I'm 51, so it's like, it's a lot.
You look great.
Thank you. You do too.
Wow.
The best. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
I am a long-term fan, and I'm so glad that I got to talk to you.
Right back at you.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
And now my conversation with comedian and actor Atsuko Okatsuka, host of the woke Japanese game show, Let's Go Atsuko.
You've always had this sort of kind of hair.
This sort of kind of hair, yeah.
I think so, because it's always kind of architectural, heavy fashion, heavy bangs.
Margaret.
Youthful, playful. Yeah. I appreciate it when a comedian has a good fashion sense.
Mm.
There's not a lot.
Yeah. I do too. Because I think people get in their heads like, oh, then I'll have to explain why I look like this. Or, you
right.
know, my comedy has to be a fashion, you know, it has to match my look.
Right.
I think that's what happens.
I think that's what happens also. Like, they just, I think comedians, you know, they don't want to like challenge people with the way they look. And then they want to be as like neutral as mm-hmm, possible, especially women.
Yeah.
Because you feel like, I don't want to be too pretty. Right. I don't want to be too scary. Yeah. I don't want to be too sexual. Like, you have to kind of modify all of the aspects of your personality to remain agreeable to an audience, because you have to kind of like mitigate their misogyny.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, you have to be like, well, okay, now they're on my side. You have to feel like they're on your side. You have to feel like you're on their side, you know, or else they're like, she's too hot. How would I ever start to empathize?
Right.
Or whatever. I mean, you know, it's probably a product of like, it is a product of misogyny and, you know, us feeling like we have to do that.
It's socialization, but it's also kind of like comedy itself, like the nature of it. So the one sort of archetype that we accept, well, there's two. There's lesbian, mm-hmm, always
mm-hmm.
fine.
Mm-hmm.
And tomboy,
mm-hmm,
always fine. So that would be like Ellen and Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
And I know Sarah a long time. And when she first started, like I started a little before her in the 90s, she had a rough because she was so beautiful, mm-hmm, and so perfect for the time in sort of like an athletic 70s style, like baseball tee.
Sure.
And like bell bottoms and just so beautiful, mm-hmm, that she had a hard time in the beginning to get audiences to trust that she was so brilliant.
Right.
And
right.
She is.
Like, listen to the actual words.
Right.
Right.
With a high voice, also taboo. Because we were trying to like talk as low as we could.
Sure.
You know, trying to have like the lowest serious.
Right.
But you know, it's like not natural for me anyway. But it's like
to talk low.
To talk really like low. Yeah. I was never. Like, I'm just not baritone.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, you gotta be, just. Would you say you're like an alto?
I am a mezzo. Well, I know that I'm a singer. I'm mm-hmm. a mezzo.
Oh, interesting. See, I don't know singing that much. I was in a choir, my uncle's choir one time. That's how mm-hmm. I found out I was an alto.
Oh, yeah.
He wouldn't give me other parts. Also was never asked back after the first performance.
Oh.
But it was a cantata, which is like a 45-minute piece, hard. You know. It's hard.
That's a lot.
That's my audition.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
But you always do like the fashion moment with comedy, which I really appreciate. And you do kind of explain it. It becomes part of your comedy, but not in a way that it's like, oh, well, this is all I am. But you get to introduce like just the moment of like, yes, I'm wearing this. And then you can take it beyond.
Right. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a good way to like kind of warm up what you're about to say.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, you know, if fashion is a part of who you are,
yeah, right?
It's a big part of who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think like it just will translate in your attitude, the things you talk about, the things you think about.
Yes.
You know, and so, yeah, yeah. I try not to talk about like my haircut so much because then at a certain point you run out. It's only so much architecture, you know?
Well, the haircut is like just the perfect accessory though.
It's you just know? An accessory.
It's like for fashion to really work, you have to have the right hair and the right dressing for your body. So do you think towards that, like about like your body, like I'm going to wear something that kind of shows it off because it's very beautiful and dancer, mm-hmm. athletic. But at the same time, it's not overtly sexualized.
Yeah, I've been wearing more pants, though, to be honest, lately, because I'm still struggling with that. Mm-hmm. And so I've been covering up a little more lately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know why. You know, sometimes you get back into that phase of, you know, thinking about the audience too much.
Well, it's more like, I think it's also easier to wear pants because I can do more physically, like if I want to like get down on the ground,
yeah,
or, you know, do whatever stupid, like dumb physical thing, I can just get in that position. Right. So it is kind of, it's like an action oriented. I love a squirt.
A squirt.
A squirt. Like it's a pants, squirt. Like pants skirt. Squirt.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the pants is underneath the skirt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that you have, I want to be able to twerk just like you. You want to twerk.
Yes, I've seen your booty shakes.
Yeah, I try
on the Instagrams.
It's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like you're working out. You know, fitness. Fitness is hot.
Fitness is hot, and twerking is difficult. And you're very good. You can twerk squatting, which is like it's a mixed metaphor, but also it's great. Like I'm like how and not just squatting, but like squatting on like a stool or like a raised surface.
Right, right. Raised surface with small surface area to put your feet on your base.
So you could probably like you could be like those like guys in Hong Kong who stand on the top of a building mm-hmm. and the very, very scary Instagram videos.
Yeah.
And
or like a goat. You know how
You could
goats
be like a goat twerking.
Mm, yes.
Like on a cliffside or a mountaintop.
I love how goats have such crazy balance on just the tiniest little surface, mm-hmm. you know,
it's
sideways.
Great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
But so what is the key to twerking on like a ledge?
So a lot of it ups to just the regular squat. You know, right. The Asian squat is, you know, that was sort of my resting pose for a long time. I have shorter legs. Proportionally, I have shorter legs. It's good to know your body, mm-hmm. you know, accept it, love it. I have shorter legs, so I feel like I can get down to the ground faster.
Right.
Technically, that makes sense,
right?
Yeah,
of course.
And then so, and balance, yeah, I've just been, you know, squatting has always been comfortable for me. The butt, the twerking part, you know, that's still, I'm still trying to wrap my head around why me? Why me? How can I do that, you know?
You're so good at it though, because it's like, and there's a kind of a reggaeton flavor. It's not a hip hop twerk. It's a reggaeton twerk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Downbeat. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were doing it. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Down.
Like, cause it's like,
down.
It's definitely like, because the twerking that we see, like Magic City twerking or like twerking that you would see in a rap video.
Yeah.
It's quite like up.
Up.
Like a city girl twerking is like mm-hmm. up.
Yeah.
But you go for like a, it's like reggaeton, like a dance hall.
It is dance hall, yeah.
It's intense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always say like hip hop is like, even when you're listening to it, you kind of nod up.
Right.
Right? Dance hall, you nod down.
You nod down.
Yeah.
And it's very, I think it really adds something and it makes it very different, but it also makes it very intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because twerking, like if you're twerking on
I'm
hip hop.
I'm so shy talking about this.
Oh, no, it's good.
No, it's great. Yeah.
It's good.
Thanks for,
But twerking on the up is like, that is like a sissy bounce. And when I was in New Orleans in 2008, somebody mm-hmm. asked me to go to a big Frida show. And they were like, this is going to be the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
You will see. And mm-hmm. so we went to the show. It was so loud that it was like, my face was shaking in ways that wasn't expected. And Big Frida was on stage. And then all of these women all over, and they were all different sizes, all different races, all different age range.
Amazing.
And they were all twerking. They were all climbing up on the wall, putting their hands on the wall
uh-huh.
and twerking. I had never seen twerking. I didn't, they didn't have a name for it.
No, you're right. You're right. It didn't. I mean, I feel like Miley Cyrus was, you know, unfortunately, like that's when, that's when people were like, oh, what this, that's this, what this term. Is.
Yeah. Yeah. That just sort of brought that into the forefront. But before then, it had just been these women dancing to Big Frida and Katie Redd and all of these great Sissy Bounce artists. In, so it was queer. And so there was a woman, her name, she was a sex worker, and her name was Altercation. That was her name. Altercation.
Okay. Yeah.
And she was teaching how to dance this way. Mm-hmm. And so I asked her for a lesson. So she took me in the bathroom.
Amazing.
And then she was like, the weirdest accent. They have a really strange accent in New Orleans, but it's very, very thick because it kind of sounds New York, but it's like.
She goes, the Cajun?
Yeah, Cajun. She's like, oh, you gotta like. It's all you in your bone. It's your bone. And she's like, just stop holding on to your flesh and just shake your bones.
Uh-huh. And how did it go?
It did not go well. And I still have some issues
bathroom,
with it.
In the bathroom, just you and her.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then later she was on stage and doing the move. And I was like so transfixed by her just amazing body. And it was doing this. And she was a great teacher. Yeah. And I like anybody named Altercation.
Yeah, Altercation. Yeah, I heard at first I heard Ultra and I was like, oh, I like that too.
Yeah, Ultra is good, like an Ultra Vacation.
Ultra, yeah.
Altercation as if you got in a fight with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was in a fight with my ass to try to make it move like that.
Yeah.
And I could never really do it quite, but I really loved it. And so since then, of course, now twerking is a big deal and we have Big Frida, which is all the, I love Big Frida and I love the music that she makes and everything that's happening around that.
Yeah.
It's cool. But when you do it, it's very, like, to me, like, you actually bring into it a dancer sensibility. So the movements are very precise.
Oh, to the beat.
To the beat. And then I love how, is it your grandmother? Was she watching?
My grandma and my mom.
And
yeah.
Your mom. And they just love it.
They have so much fun. They are my angels. They are my guardian angels. And you know, my grandma has been a caretaker all her life, and so it hasn't been till recent years that she's been like on Instagram,
right?
You know, and she loves it.
They are so supportive, and they're just like, they look at your ass, like, oh, you know, they're like so excited, they're like. Oh, no, you know, they love it. And it's really
great.
That is
great. The sound they make. Yeah, just it's like that.
They're impressed.
They're impressed. They are support. They are proud.
Proud. Supportive. And then.
She came out of me, you
like,
know?
Oh, like, oh. You know, they have like a deep appreciation. And it's so funny, but it's so like really cute too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have they tried to twerk?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, there's a couple of videos where we all do it together.
Mm-hmm.
And they get it right, you know. Honestly, it's like, for me, it's in the hips. So it's just right here, like where your waist is, that's all you're moving.
Yeah.
Truly, it's not, you're not mentally trying to make your butt work. That's when you get stuck.
Yeah.
You know, it's literally just your waist that you're moving. And so they're moving their waist.
Yeah.
They're moving their waist. Yeah. Their butts, they've been sitting for so long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're decades of sitting.
Right.
And so it's flat. But whatever, you know, you work with what you have.
That's right. And I think that's what we should be doing in the senior centers. There's a lot of senior centers in Japantown and San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they're all up there. I guess they're doing Sudoku or whatever. But they should be twerking. Like, they should be like, well, like, I think they also do some dance class.
Yeah,
you got to move
that
lymph around.
Definitely the morning exercises, for sure.
Yeah.
Calisthenics. But a dance class with music.
Yeah, they would get so excited. They get so turned. I also love it when like hip-hop guys watch you do your twerking because they're always commenting like, oh, you know, she got a little booty, but it, you know, it worked. Like, they're like, oh, yeah. Like, oh, of course.
I would have never thought so, but okay.
They're it's like, yeah, they're the like, hey, you know, the twerking gatekeepers.
Yes.
There's quite a few of them.
Of course.
Out there.
And respect. I always, you know, like to be like, it was not founded by me or Miley. You know,
No.
Give big ups to, you know, the black community, the queer community. Oh, so many dance moves, even like the death drop or the dip, you know, coming from the queer community too. So that, like, you know, so that the straight people can try it at home. Well, you know I what mean, I mean?
No, but you do it in a, it's not, the thing about it is that it's like, the thing is it is actually, the way you're doing it is quite a classic sort of reggaeton move. It's very Kingston, it's very Jamaica, it's very, it's different. It is actually kind of more of a different approach dance-wise. There's like all these people who like they're like the reaction videos on YouTube,
right,
and stuff. So they're like watching twerking and they're like talking about it and stuff. So there's always a very like opinionated thing of like whenever a woman moves her body, there's going to be some sort of like talk about it.
For sure, got my first photo ever removed from Instagram.
Really?
Have you ever gotten photos removed from Instagram?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, you have the gorgeous, gorgeous, like your head on other people's bodies.
Oh,
I
yeah,
love that.
Ronald McDonkey. Love that. Yeah. He's my friend. He's a great, he's a really, really funny, great Instagram artist. But
yeah,
I don't think I've ever, I think he has had some problems with that. Like he's had some issues where they've removed things, but I don't think I have.
Yeah. No, yeah. First ever. I was just like my, you know, kind of like, you know, I wasn't always comfortable being in my body till like recent years, ever since I started kind of popping my butt, you know? And then so I was like, I'm going to post a, you know, almost nudie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that got taken off.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so, which means someone reported it. And
that's
so,
weird.
So there are, you know, gatekeepers out there who are
yeah,
like,
I mean, people, it's like, why?
You know, there's people mad at people being happy.
I don't know. I always think, like, I want to pop that pussy on headstand. Not in a literal way, because I think I would probably, like, you know, crush a vertebra, but I think that it would be
Margaret, with the right stretches, you can. Yeah, just the right proper warm-up.
If I warm up and cool down.
I've seen you do some crazy physical stuff.
Maybe, but, yeah. I have to really, like, be careful about it, but, yeah, popping the pussy, I like a pussy pop, the idea of it, because it's always, like, so stiff down there. Everything is, like, so stiff, so I want to, like, open up. So that's
stiff,
why I like.
Stiff at the pussy right now, or stiff, like, when you're in a headstand?
I think the headstand. I think it's the gravity.
Yeah, yeah, of course, because everything is being brought to your head.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have to defeat that gravity and pop it upwards.
Pop it up, and then also hold up your weight with your hands.
Yeah, it's just, it's a lot, yeah.
It's all a lot. I think, you know what, death drop is really scary. I've never really done a death drop. Can you do one?
You know, I've done one, but the getting back up is just, it's such, you know.
It's hard.
I did it at Akbar. I was excited. I was with my friends. I was so excited.
Yeah.
I was so excited, and I did one, and I never came back up.
It's hard.
So I became the burden. Everyone, look at her.
Oh, she's no.
The everyone just. Walking around me, my friends were like, no, yeah, why, what are you, look at this fucking
wait,
girl.
Were you on the dance floor at Akbar?
I was on the dance floor.
Oh,
and then the music
drop.
It was like the beat was about to drop, and I was like, oh, this
oh,
is
you're
it
gonna do
ha
it.
Boom.
Oh
yeah.
No.
And then yeah, just I've never seen so many people just walk around me.
Oh,
and
no,
I don't feel bad. I was like, this is what I deserve. I am now the burden,
right?
You know,
right?
No one told me I had to do that, but yes, so I have tried.
You know, you have to do the death drop. I like to watch the femme voguing competitions in Europe on YouTube. And they're usually like, there's a voguer, I think she's Finnish. Her name is Inksi.
Mm-hmm.
She's very good. So it's the two women, and it's rare to see women voguing. So this is kind of a special category.
Uh-huh,
and so they do so many death drops. And I'm like, how...
Yeah.
I'm scared.
In a row.
Mm-hmm. And then when they do them, they synchronize and they do it together.
Mm-hmm.
And they do them at each other.
Okay,
and then they really easily get back up. Part of it, I think, is like they have knee pads.
Sure.
So that's a thing. And they're definitely like doing something where they're almost on their knee going down and then they just lean back. And so that the death drop isn't actually like the impact.
Right.
It's more of a controlled movement. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, where they're already close to the position.
Mm-hmm.
It's about hitting the falling back and then coming back up.
Right.
Not so much, from standing.
It's not from like
or
a
jumping.
Great height. No, yeah. I mean, I've seen that too.
Of course.
But it's more like, it's more of a folding down.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
if you just fold down on the beat, then it seems like a death drop.
Yeah, I don't know why folding down is so funny. Yeah, like a crane, like an origami.
It's like a it's like a crane. If you like unfolded the leg for a second and then you folded it back up.
Exactly. So graceful when you talk about it.
Yeah.
So hard to hit.
It's hard to hit, and it's like to me, it's sort of like it hits a lot of fears of like. You know, you got to protect that lizard brain.
Because
that controls all the involuntary function, like breathing and heartbeat. So, you know, just try not to, you know,
Don't hit that.
Don't hit that against anything.
Yeah, because once you're in motion, you're like, I'm supposed to hit four in a row. You're screwed.
Yeah.
There goes that lizard brain.
Yeah,
there
don't mess around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a very...
You do headstands in yoga?
Sometimes I'll do like a, you know what I'll do is I'll do like a wall supported headstand, which is kind of, and I'll do like dolphins and stuff. Like I'll do a lot of like things that are kind of in the realm of it. Like, but it's also wall support.
Sure. Where it's just about like the inversion or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Getting your legs above your head.
Yeah. So to me, I mean, that's the main gist of what I do. I used to get really crazy in yoga and, nowadays, I do less and less. Every time it gets real turnt in yoga, I'm like, I have my period, which I haven't for many years. But
you
still.
Just start bleeding.
I just say that I have my period.
Oh, yeah. To be like, I'm going to be in baby, okay?
Yeah, I'm in child's birth. I'm going to rest. That's my friend Mike Albo. He is so funny. He's just a funny comedian, but he's a gay comic. And, you know, it takes a really long time for him to text you back. So I just, when he finally does, I go, you know what? I've been resting in child's pose this whole time waiting for you. It's cool. What other dance modalities have you done? What did you start with?
Of course, classic the ballet. Yeah, I was pigeon-toed when I was born and all the way to... I mean, I'm still kind of pigeon-toed, so my toes went inwards. So it's very hard to do the turnout
for me. Oh, the turnout, yeah.
And yeah, just shorter legs than most of the people in my class. And so ballet was very difficult for me. It hurt me. It always hurt. So then I, you know, once I got the basics of ballet down, then I was able to like venture into like modern dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then dance hall, I just fell in love with dance hall in high school when I was a cheerleader.
Oh, you were a cheerleader?
I was a cheerleader.
Cute.
Those girls took me in. I didn't have any other skills.
That's amazing.
I was bad at classes, you know. Mm-hmm. I was bad at school. So I was like, I love dancing, you know. This is my that crew took me in. So,
but that's very unusual for Asian Americans. I mean, it's like, what did your family say about the school stuff? I mean, they like my parents were so upset that I was a bad student that I was like almost like dead to them for a long time. I mean, until I started like my career as a comedian.
Yeah.
They really were like, she doesn't exist almost.
God. And they could until you were a comedian, they could see the money.
Then it was like, oh, I see. I mean, did your family accept that you wanted to be a comedian, an artist? What did they say about
they're
that?
They're pretty different, you know, like we don't really have like male figures in our family, for example. That's why it's always me, my mom and grandma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't really have like men in our lives, so the rules weren't patriarchal, you know, in our family. We were more happy that we were able to like survive.
Yeah.
The three of us were undocumented here for 7 years and lived in my uncle's garage, and so they truly didn't care too much what I was going to do.
Wow.
They were more stoked about like, well, we made it here.
Yeah.
Oh, we finally got our green card. So they're not like, oh, now you must also be doctor.
Wow.
You know, it's more like things were already hard. Your mom has schizophrenia. Just do what, you know, is going to let you continue living. Of course, you should love it.
That's
too.
Great.
Yeah. So it's a little different. I wasn't like,
That's definitely different. I think that then that's more of like a... it's more of a class issue, you know? It's like the higher sort of like aspirations that your family has towards like being middle class or upper class, then the idea of like school and education, like they'll want you to go to a white school, Harvard or Yale.
Yeah.
Like then the ultimate Oxford. Because it's like you really Oxford. White then. Like you real white if you go to England.
Yeah.
That's then. Like the, you know, that's like the the mothership for mm-hmm. white people. Mm-hmm. And so you gotta like get
it's
out true. There.
It's your root. Yeah, it's their roots.
Yeah.
You went to their roots.
That's even in Parasite when they make the fake educational like schools. Thing documentary. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. like, does Oxford have a
you know, I didn't think about that. Well, I know they were constantly trying to be impressive with like, oh, it's Western schools in the West.
But yeah.
It didn't get to me that Oxford thing.
Yeah, it's not part of the way that you were looked towards aspirational goals.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's good. I mean, because it's like, why should that be a determinant of like success? Like to me, it never made sense because it's like, well, I don't really care to have a career that relies on education of that variety.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not an appealing thought to me to be like spending the third of my life in school.
Yeah,
before
totally.
I begin it.
Yeah,
you know, and
then you might not have been in New Orleans, you know,
right? And watched Big Frida,
separating your flesh from bone, or whatever
yeah,
it was told.
You know, you get to like do what you want as opposed to missing out on stuff because you're sort of told that this is the path.
Yeah.
You know, I was ready to start my life. So when did you start doing comedy?
I started when I was 20. Mm-hmm. 20, yeah. Because I dropped out of undergrad.
Oh, good, yeah.
I was bad at school, again, you know, UC Riverside. Yeah, so then I was like, oh, I'll take a moment for myself, finally.
Yeah.
You know, and get in the arts. I've always liked making people laugh. And so I was like, how do I start, you know?
Yeah.
And I can start now. I'm not in school.
Yeah. And where did you start?
I started in LA. I was already in LA. And I took a class online. I found one on Craigslist.
Oh, cool.
I said, I don't know how to learn things any other way.
Yeah.
Also, open mics look like if I went, I would, you know, maybe not come out the same ever again.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's all very intimidating when we start because it's like, this is like such a weird world.
Yeah. And it depends on every person's process, you know?
Right.
I'm just very, you know, I get intimidated easily. And if someone even said one thing about like how I looked or something, I knew I would crumble.
Oh, yeah. I know. Because it's like, we're just insecure. But the thing is like, you're really funny, but you have a really different point of view, which is really important. Like, there's something very surreal about your, the way your mind works and your humor. Your sense of humor is very, like, there's no category, you know, because it's like, I don't know where she's coming from, but I want to go there. So that's like kind of like the audience's journey is that this is like, we're in a spaceship. Like, this is like super weird.
I feel like I'm in a spaceship.
Yeah. And it's great because it's like, usually comedians, I kind of know what's happening. Like this, like, yeah, I know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But with you, you got like, this is rare, is like an Andy Kaufman thing where it's like, I don't know where I'm going. Where are we going? Like, what's going on? It's going to be okay. But that's cool.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Thank you for saying it's going to be okay. Cause I never know if it's going to be okay.
It's always going to be okay.
I don't know where I'm going either.
Right. But that's the joy of it is like, we're going to discover this together.
I do like this style of comedy that you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when it comes to, I was just thinking like, you know, some people are just like, the thing that I make, I don't go and, you know, watch.
Right.
Yeah,
of course.
Which is interesting to me.
It is.
That's someone's process.
Right.
Yeah.
I think like,
I didn't want to name names, but I was just I heard an interview and I was like, what? You haven't seen the movie you were in? We've all seen it. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean,
J-Lo's in it. Oops.
Sometimes you have to like not, you got to not see yourself. I don't like watching myself.
Oh, really? Yeah.
In movies or TV or whatever. I was there when we made it. I don't need to see it.
So, got it. Yeah. So you prepare, you show up to the shoot.
Yeah, I do.
And
it.
That's the last time you've experienced that.
Maybe
that
I'll watch
scene.
A take if the director needs me to see something.
Interesting.
In playback, and I'll go, oh. And sometimes they'll point something out that I didn't realize, and then I'll do it, and then it is fine. But it's more like, I experience this and I feel really strange watching it.
I get that. Yeah.
So I don't really care to do that. But
like Adam Driver like walked out during it.
Yeah,
interview.
I get that. Yeah, because I would just be like, oh, I don't want to see it. Like I said, I just feel weird and I'm judging myself as I'm watching.
If it doesn't feel good. Yeah. And if you feel like you've done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I actually do love, I loved going to see stand-up comedy, and the kind of comics like I love are like, I like Michelle Buteau a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I like
big fan
Brent Weinbach a lot.
Yeah,
he actually is very similar to, I think, what you do in the surreal space of like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm here and I'm going with you.
He's amazing. Yeah,
he's amazing.
He does it on a different level that I'm like, God, I wish I could. You know?
Yeah. But honestly, but it's also so strange. I'm like, I don't even know how to. I don't even know the point of entry of like how he thinks of things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you should do a show with Patty Harrison.
Yes,
she's
yeah.
great.
I love Patty.
She's
yeah.
super weird.
She's weird too. Yeah,
it's like what's going on?
She has songs up her sleeves too. You
yes.
know? Yeah,
it's very strange.
Yeah,
so funny.
Yeah, been on the same lineups, but yeah, like I think I'm maybe more normal, quote unquote, than these people. I mean, honestly, everyone inspires me so much.
I wouldn't comedies. Say that you are normal. I think that you really are, like, you embrace the surreal, which is really cool. I think it's really not normal, but that's the best part.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I guess to you it's normal because you're inside your art all the time.
Sure.
So for
sure.
you it's like, oh, this is normal.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's true.
So okay. it's the truth of who you are.
Am I normal?
Yeah. But better.
Right.
Better than normal.
Yeah.
You're you.
Oh, Margaret.
The best.
This is not meant to be. You just made me feel too good during this.
You're the best.
You were saying something earlier about, oh, how that's not your, the inversions were not your process anymore with what you're trying to do with like fitness.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious what you've been doing.
I've been doing, I got a Peloton bike.
Oh, you did?
So
yeah, with the classes right in
yeah.
front of you?
So, uh-huh. My asshole's always on fire because I'm on that bike too much, but I like that. Also, but then now my arms have atrophied. So, like, because it's all legs.
What's atrophy?
It's when your muscles waste.
Oh,
it's
okay.
like when your muscles start to eat themselves because you're,
okay,
you're
it,
not exercising them.
Okay, yeah,
so
yeah,
I have
yeah.
to do more weights.
Well, I'm sure in the classes they do weight.
They
once
do,
too, right?
But
you're
don't
just
like
pretty
those.
Much lifting up in the air, right?
So I'm like, I'm not doing that one.
Yeah, you skip it.
I don't like that one.
That's the power of
Peloton.
The Peloton.
You can do
you
whatever
can
you
skip.
Want.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's my main thing. And then I do a lot of walks with my dog. And then I just do a lot of like walking around kind of stuff. Like maybe not so conscious exercise, but just like city exploration. Like if I'm going out on
yeah.
like... on like a trip, like if I'm like doing a show, I like to walk around the city.
Love it.
So that's my
right.
that's my a thing.
Yeah.
Are you doing shows on the road? Are you doing shows in town? And where can people catch your comedy and everything you're doing?
Yes. So I do my Japanese game show monthly
yes.
at Dynasty Typewriter,
mm-hmm.
and then it's also a weekly podcast. It's called Let's Go Otsuko. And I have my album out, my first ever album.
I love
out
it. Yes,
with Comedy Dynamics called "But I Control Me." Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
well, where can people catch your Insta and all of your things going on?
I'm at Otsuko Comedy, and I dare you report me. Report my photos.
No,
I already did it once.
No,
I reposted it. I reposted it.
You're the best.
Taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
I don't know where to start. Coming out of the dark.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.